Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting from Atlanta, Georgia, this is The Bright Side with Technisha.
A daily broadcast on real-life issues that will keep you motivated.
And now, here's your host, Technisha.
Good afternoon, everyone. Today is March the 19th, 2014, and you're tuning into another episode of The Bright Side with Technisha. And I hope everyone has had a blessful day. And tomorrow is officially spring, and today is hump day. I've been wanting to have for the longest on a Wednesday. Yes, today is hump day, so let's get to it. If you're going to work today, make sure you hump at it. Get what you got to get and get out. That's the name of it. I am waiting on one of my special guests today. His name is David Takaro. He is a leukemia cancer survivor, and he has an inspirational story to share with us. He has a book out that's very inspiring. So as we wait on him to contact us, I will be hitting you with some tunes as I always do. I'm not going to let you sit here and not have nothing to listen to. So I am going to hit you with a little J-Lo, Get on the Floor.
J-Lo, ya tú sabes, no hay más nada. Mr. Worldwide, dale, get on the flow, 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 dale, I want the whole world to get on the flow, dale, 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 I want the whole world to get on the flow, dale.
I'm loose, and everybody knows I get off the chain, baby, it's true, it's true. I'm like Inception, I play with your brain, so don't sleep or snooze, snooze. I don't play no games, so don't get it confused, no. Cause you will lose, yeah. Now pump it up and back it up like a Tonka truck. That badonka donk, it's like a trunk full of bass on an old school Chevy. Seven tray donka donk. All I need is some box and some chunky conk, and watch the chico get donkey conk. Maybe if you ready for things to get heavy, I get on the floor and that a boo if you let me. Lally, don't believe me, just bet me. My name ain't Keith, but I see the way you sweat me. L.A., Miami, New York, say no more, get on the floor.
right. Get on the floor, because today, again, is hump day. And on the line, I have David DeCaro. He is the subject of the book, Blood to the Bone. He is a very inspirational young man who has defeated leukemia, and his story has touched so many in so many ways. He's one of perseverance and hope. So keep your eyes and your ears open. There's an always place. Good afternoon, David. How are you?
I'm excellent. Thank you so very much for having me on your show. I really appreciate it. How are you doing today?
I am doing wonderful. But I was bad to the bone. Bad to the bone. Yes, David, can you tell us a bit about your story and your book?
Yes, hi. So my story begins about going back into my childhood when I was mistaking my father's success for my success, and I was causing a lot of inadequacies in myself because my dad was a very successful man, and he had set the bar so high for himself, and like I said, I mistook that for me having to achieve his goals, and I fell short a lot. So it talks a lot about inadequacies, and it goes from there into Christmas Eve when I was diagnosed with cancer in 2006, and it talks about the journey for the fight of my life and just, you know, how a cynical person's, you know, point of view can change into that of a, you know, positive thinker. And I'm just trying to, you know, stress to people that, you know, I came from a place of cynicism at one point, and now, you know, I live a life of positivity and couldn't have it any other way. So this book really touches a lot of different subjects, you know, growing up and just being like a normal person and being hit with something so detrimental that all you can do is fight for your life. So there's a lot of inspiration in those pages.
It is. It's very inspiring. It really touches you in a way where if you have not went through, you felt like you went through. Now, throughout this book, you spoke mostly about your father. Why do you ever think you were a disappointment to him? Because I know you mentioned that you felt like he always paid more attention to your sister.
Yeah, I think it was because, like I just said, he set his goals really high for himself, and I, you know, wanted to do the same thing as he was doing, and it wasn't going to match up even close because, you know, God had already set his life path out. He was just following it, and I was confusing his for mine. So growing up, you know, I'm watching my dad, you know, get all these awards and, you know, do all these incredible things, and I just wanted to be exactly like him. And I don't know why he kind of showed more attention to my sister than me. That I don't really understand. Maybe I think it was because they were both more of the same kind of people. But for me, it was just trying to be like he was.
And you thought, and with that, was it ever hard to try to come up to his standards?
Absolutely, you know. But the thing I was mistaken is he was only in life setting me up to be my own successful person in my own way. And, you know, he nurtured my love for music very well. And that's, you know, still my passion to this day. And he's nurtured that very well. But like I said, I was mistaking his success for mine. And it just, you're not going to be somebody else or, you know, claim their success a second time. It just, that was a hard lesson for me to really learn.
Yeah, you can only do what you can. It's hard because sometimes we do try to follow in our parents' footsteps, and you're never going to achieve that goal sometimes. So, I'm glad at some point you never try to beat up on yourself, oh, I can't do this, and you just kept continuing what you had to do. So, 2006, you discovered this. So what age were you when you found out something was wrong?
25. I just turned 25. You know, a couple of months had passed, and I started getting all the symptoms, you know, flu-like symptoms. Mm-hmm. Nausea, vomiting, I was hemorrhaging, very, very fatigued. There were days where I would lie on a couch and couldn't get up to go get a glass of water. You know, I just couldn't move. And I just thought it was a really, really bad flu, maybe what's the word I'm looking for here? Bronchitis. There we go. I thought it could have been bronchitis or something just knocking me down. And, you know, my father kept saying, go get your blood work done, go get your blood work done, but I didn't do that. And I'm not sure if it was subconsciously I was scared to go to the doctor or if I just knew that there was something wrong and I didn't want to go to find out. But I just, and the thing is, I didn't go until the very late, very bitter end, and it was when I was diagnosed.
So what are some of the symptoms of your illness?
Well, you know, like I said, it's a very, very extreme flu-like symptoms. You know, you get nausea, you're vomiting, extreme fatigue, hemorrhaging, bruising, actually. I found bruising was another kind of indicator because you could, you know, if I was in a shower and say I was rubbing my arms or my back, bruises would just appear, you know, bruises would just appear on me. So that was another indicator that there's something going on for me, and I didn't really, you know, like I said, I think I just didn't want to find out that there was something wrong with me, and, you know, that whole saying, if you ignore it, it'll go away, I think that really came into effect for me, and was just hoping it wasn't going to be there, or it wasn't going to be bad.
Now, David, are there two types of leukemia? Because I read online that there were two, acute and chronic.
Yeah, there's acute and there's chronic, but there's myelogenic leukemia, there's chronic myelogenic, like there's CML, CLL, ALL, AML, so there's a few different forms of, you know, the leukemia, and I had ALL, acute lymphoblastic leukemia, which is childhood leukemia, and in an adult, childhood leukemia is a very rare thing to get, and it's a very incredibly hard disease to fight off, because it's so rare, it's only, you know, really seen in children.
Wow. Oh. So throughout this book and with yourself, what is the message you are trying to send?
I'm really trying to just, you know, two messages. One, you know, like I said earlier, coming from a cynical point of view, you know, I know, understand full too well how cliche and cheesy it is to sit there and say, be positive. But from a person who has literally changed their mind frame, it is the greatest thing I could have done, and I urge everybody to start thinking positively, no matter how grim or dark the situation. You know, write in a journal, write on a piece of paper, write on a post-it note, just write. And also, importance of bone marrow donation, because a bone marrow donation is what saved my life, and I just can't, you know, be thankful enough for that. So my mission with this book is to raise the awareness of the importance of bone marrow donations, and to start creating some more success stories amongst the people, you know, that, you know, the donor is meeting the recipient. And I want to be a part of all that. You know, I want to create all that and just, you know, all these incredible stories of, you know, people and just people, you know, being humanitarian, if you will, just people being people and helping other people is really what it boils down to for me.
Yeah, because you even have a website out where people can go to register to become a donor. Can you tell me a little more about that?
Yes. If you go to my website, www.davidtuccaro.com, T-U-C-C-A-R-O.com, there's a link on there that says become a donor. If you click on that link, it will give you all the information you need to become a bone marrow donor. And I cannot stress this enough to your listeners. It is not painful. One more time, it is not a painful process like it used to be. You know, it used to be where they would aspirate from your hip. They don't do that anymore. Now they just, you know, a little needle in your left arm, needle in your right arm, and it takes it out into a machine. It will keep your bone marrow. It will put your blood and your platelets back inside of you. So it's a very, very, very painless process. I cannot stress that enough. It is very painless.
You know, that reminds me on Good Morning America, they were doing mammograms for women, and they were talking about how so many people don't want to go get checked on because they're afraid that it might hurt. When you go get your eyebrows plucked and that hurts, you go get waxed and that hurts. So just 5 little seconds or 5 minutes of your time to just really go see about your health, it should be very important, and it should not be, you shouldn't be in the mind frame, oh, it's going to hurt. Well, if it does, let it hurt. But I'd rather to be safe than sorry, to know that something is wrong. So please, people, if you are out there, please go get yourself checked up on. Make sure you get your colposcopy checkups, your colon counts, for colon counts, everything, ovarian. Make sure that you are safe. Don't wait to the last minute and wait for something major to happen and say, oh, okay, it's here now. What to do? Let me panic. So what was the process of writing the book like, especially
I was just going to say the process of writing the book was so very incredible on so many different levels. You know, first off, just writing the story for me was a big step because deep down inside of me, I knew I had to share my story and just to, you know, for me, just to get it out, you know, just to write and just to get rid of those feelings that I was holding on to was a big part of that. And writing this with Marilla was just so incredible, you know. I told her about my story, you know, what was going on, what I'd been through, and she thought it was a tremendous story, and she too thought that the story needed to be shared. So we, you know, I went out to Ohio a few times to go be with her and write the story.
Okay.
And, you know, she would just, you know, we would just be talking back and forth like a normal conversation is how I was seeing it, but what she was doing was just taking all of that anger out of me, you know. She was really being so helpful by taking all that anger out of me and putting it on paper. You know, we laughed, we cried, we just had a great time talking about what I'd gone through with the story. And it's just so night and day what that book has done for me, because, you know, I don't walk around harboring all of those feelings anymore. I'm happy now, you know. I went through that. It was a part of my life.
Yeah.
That I can now, you know, flip back to chapter 4 and read what happened, you know what I mean? And the writing process is just it's the greatest thing I could have done. And like I said earlier, again, I will say again, write in a journal, write on a piece of paper, write on a little post-it note, just write, get your feelings out, especially if they're hurting you, harming you, if they were, you know, making you sad or in any way, just write that feeling out. Go back to it like, I don't know, 5, 6, 10, 24 hours later and think how silly that feeling was, you know, laugh at it. Build your self-esteem and confidence up that way, you know. It's just such a tremendous thing to do is writing. And I can't stress again how much confidence building that was for me to write the story. It built up a lot of confidence. Yeah, absolutely it did.
Because that will make you that will keep you sane at times if you write it down and just to get your words out on paper, because keeping that all bottled up will just make you sick and it will stress you out. It sure will. So I'm glad you are very courageous, David. You made it, and I'm thankful to God that you actually made it through this trial and tribulation, because I know, like, on page 92 of the book, when you wrote, "When I returned home, I headed straight from my bedroom, shut the door, and curled up in bed. I stared at the walls until I got lost in a pool of desolate thoughts. I was out of time, and I felt it. Counsel was erasing me." So is that, when you felt like that at that time, counsel was erasing you, is that the point where you just want to start writing down your feelings?
Before that, actually. But at that time, no, when you're talking about there, that was one of the times where I was still going through the motions of, you know, like fear and anger and all that. And, you know, it's still one of those feelings that you need to really propel you to beat it. You know, you need to go through the whole series of emotions in order to fight cancer. You know, you need to hold on to a few, but you also need to let go of some others, you know. And writing, you know, was a big thing. Like I said, then I did start writing, but before then is really when the process began.
So I had to take a moment of silence because it gets you in so many ways just listening to you talk about this. How did you end up meeting Marilla? Am I saying her name correctly, Marilla?
Yeah, Marilla. That's right. Yeah, Marilla.
Oh,
I'd read her book and, you know, just kind of a fluke chance, you know, reach out to her. Hopefully she takes a story on, because I love the way she wrote In Our House. And I was just hoping, you know, if this could work out, you know, that I would love to do this, but I'm not sure because I've never really gone down this avenue before. So I reached out to her, told her a bit about my story, and she just thought it was phenomenal. And she said, absolutely, I will take this on. And, you know, let's get you writing. We'll help heal you, and we'll get the story out there, and we'll make it a mission to, you know, start saving lives with bone marrow donations. And the process was just such a beautiful, brilliant thing for me.
I know it had to be for you to just get that out on paper. Do you think if you hadn't met her that you would have ended up writing this yourself?
Oh, I still would have written it, absolutely. But
okay.
I absolutely would not have been able to publish it or, you know, have the great story that I have, it would just wouldn't have been the same. You know, it just would not have. I mean, the way I look at it is, I'm just following God's path right now, and God's going to put people in my life for a reason, and He's going to give me a little test, you know. So I feel the way everything has gone is just following God's path and walking down that road, you know, and just being conscious to the little gifts that He gives you every day. So I think this is, you know, just all of a meant to be kind of thing for me.
Exactly, and He will. That's why He did not let you go. He was not ready for you. He said, David, you still have a mission down here to complete. He still got something else in store for you. So after writing the book, do you think it helped your family understand you more?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, it did. You know, my father and my relationship is just, it's the best it's ever been, you know. He understands me now, and there were some things in the book that he had no idea, you know. Like, I didn't know you were feeling like that, or I didn't know that that one little incident was bothering you so much. And we just, you know, that really just bonded us so close together. And same with my other family members, my sister and my mom. It brought us closer together, too, but I just can't stress how much this really, really, you know, it just did so much greatness for me and my father, and I'm just so happy and thankful for that.
Me too. What other tools besides writing down your feelings helped you?
Oh, music, big time. It's got to be music, you know. I just remember, you know, I'd be at home after I'd gotten home from the hospital, and I got a computer, and I just bought, I don't know how many, I think it was about $30,000 or $40,000 worth of iTunes because I had so much money saved, and I wasn't doing anything, so I just thought, I'm going to get into music really deeply now, because I was already really deep into music, but now it was just, it was a whole new level of where I was going with music. So music really was just such a very healing, therapeutic thing for me to get into as well. And there's just so much goodness about music, you know. It can, you know, you can have like an angry day, but, you know, music will be your soundtrack to it. Or you can have a happy day and music can still be your soundtrack to it. So music was really, really a big, big, big thing for me in that time.
Any particular artist, songs that you like?
Oh, gosh, there's just so many, you know. There was Tom Petty, for instance, Won't Back Down was one of my theme songs. There was Here Comes the Sun from George Harrison, you know, that was another good song. And there was just so much good, like, classic music, you know, that I was listening to. Chuck Berry, for instance, I was listening to Maybelline a lot. I just love that song. And, you know, just a lot of the old classics is what really was getting me going.
So, David, do you get a chance to go out and maybe talk to other bone marrow recipients or people who have leukemia themselves?
I've done a couple of Light the Night walks in Los Angeles, which is, you know, the Leukemia Lymphoma Society walk. And I've met quite a few survivors at that event, you know, and a lot of the common thing was they said was, you know, they got their blood work done early and was detected early enough. But not only that, you know, I met a lot of families who've lost, you know, a member. And the Light the Night walk was really, really an eye-opening, you know, life-changing event for me, because I was like the biggest, you know, kind of arena for me to meet like-minded people like myself. And It was really a beautiful thing, but that was the biggest, you know, event that I've ever met anybody else with the same similar diseases to me.
Okay. Now, when you when you found out that you had leukemia, were you ever talked to about it? Did you know of it?
Absolutely. You know, I knew exactly. Okay, when I was in the hospital, you know, I remember being in the bed. There's a guy to the left of me, and he was screaming in pain. And from what I remember, he had a catheter put in. And all I could think to myself is, whatever I got, this dude next to me has got it worse. And that's all I could think of. So the doctor comes in, you know, because I had a few separate blood draws done that night, you know, and I guess from what I was told, my blood counts got progressively worse each blood draw. And the doctor would come in, you know, white cells this, T cells this, hemoglobin this, red cells this, you know, leukemia. And I'm thinking, what's leukemia? I mean, I know what leukemia is. It's something to do with the blood, but what's leukemia? You know, it was one of those things where you know exactly what it is, but you don't know what it is whatsoever. I don't know if that makes any sense to you, but it was just such a surreal thing that it was just really shocking that I didn't know what it was, but I knew exactly what it was. I don't know how to explain that.
No, okay. Yeah,
because I'm sure if that doesn't make any sense. It's just I knew exactly what leukemia was, but when I was told what it was, I didn't know what it was. I don't know how to explain that.
No,
it was
I think
just processing it, you know.
I think Ashley makes perfect sense. It's almost like you're saying that, kind of like when you hear something, you know of a little bit about it, but you don't know the full details of it. Like you just coming into it, okay, I know what you said about my car, but I don't know the whole full details that my car needs this work, that work. So I do, yeah, I understand what you're saying, David. It's nothing wrong at all with you. It's nothing wrong with what you said. No, I got you.
Awesome. Perfect. You know, it's just one of those really weird mind-altering things where you don't know what to make of it. You're just... You know, the doctor comes in. The job really is to be a kind of pessimistic, you know. Pray for the best, expect the worst. So I didn't really expect much, you know, kind of niceness from the doctor because that's what his job is to do. So it was just trying to, you know, at that moment, figuring it out for myself.
You know, and I hear that mostly from my guests, you know, they didn't get the positive response from the doctor. And what people have to realize, they're just human. They're sent there through God just to do his work. But God has the rest. He has his hands on the operation right then and there. Because they can be pessimistic. They can. Oh, well, you only got this long to live. Oh, okay. How wonderful. Thank you. Thank you so much. That's exactly what I would be saying to them if they ever give me that response. Thank you so much. And get the heck on out my face. Because they don't think positive. They don't, and I don't know if it's against for them to believe in God or not, but it happens, and that's what my guests been talking about on my show. They don't get that positive response. So, David, you have pictures of the bone marrow donor in your book, which is Christian Holtman.
Yes.
What was he like?
He is the most amazing man I have ever known. I was, you know, in Western Canada, in British Columbia, in Vancouver. He is in Germany, in a town called Bund. And who would have thought that in a million years, you know, a man unknowingly would just say, yes, here, give this guy across the world my bone marrow donation. You know, that blew me away, you know. Like, that just adds to the character of who this man is. And I just... I cannot be thankful enough to this man for what he has done for me, and that's really the best I can say. There is, I cannot be thankful enough to that man.
Yeah. Now, what was that experience like? Just to know someone actually cared, to give their time.
It's a very humbling feeling, you know. Because all my life, all I've ever wanted to do was help somebody, you know. And when the doctor said, you're going to need a bone marrow transplant, I thought, that's pretty funny, you know. All this time, I needed to help somebody, and now I need somebody to help me. Well, I really hope this happens, you know, so I'm going to pray to God a lot, and I'm just going to keep talking positively and just hope it happens. And, you know, when the doctor came back, you know, a few weeks later, he looked really baffled. He's like, you know, we didn't have any hope or chance for you. You didn't have any match in the Canadian or provincial or Canadian registry. And when you go to the world registry, it's really, you know, it's a long shot that you're going to find anybody. But we found you two matches. So now it comes down to choosing your blood type. So, you know, I chose Christian's blood type because he had B positive. And like I said earlier, you know, I know as a, you know, cynical person, and I just thought, you know, if I'm going to do this whole thing, I need to own the blood type, B positive. And I did. I took the blood type B positive, and I've lived my life that way ever since. It's all I can do now is B positive.
Yeah, that's the only way to make it through it. Sometimes it hurts when you get bad news, but you just have to be strong and just basically suck it up and keep it moving, because if it wants you to start laying down, that's exactly what the devil wants you to do. He wants you to give up. He feels like he have you right there in his hand. David, are there any other foundations that you have started for other bone marrow donors?
No, not yet. Just the simple, you know, doing the bone marrow donation. You know, I think that's the best you can do, is just be simple about it and just get, you know, people to swab the inside of the mouth. And when they're called upon to be a donor, you know, it's a very, very painless, easy, quick process now. So I just can't stress how easy it is, you know, and painless, especially painless than it used to be. So that's really what I want to stress right now and get across, is that it's a very painless, easy, quick thing to do. Donate bone marrow. Sign up on davidtuckerow.com. It's very simple.
David, how long you said the process is when you go in to get tested? Is it like 5 or 10 minutes?
No, it's 30 seconds. What they'll do is you just go to my website, you sign up. The bone marrow registry will send you a kit, and in that kit is a plastic tube and like a Q-tip swab. You swab the inside of your cheeks, put it back in the tube, send it to them all free of charge, and they'll run your DNA. And if you're an instant match for somebody, they'll let you know, or they'll keep it in the data bank. And when you do become a match for somebody, they will call upon you then to donate. So it could be a right-away process. It could be a several-year process. But, you know, it's just remembering and being on point and ready for it, that when you are called, that you go and, you know, donate the marrow to save a life.
Okay. That's not so bad. That's not a bad process at all, just to go in, get out, and make sure that you're okay. Yeah, I like that idea. Now, had this occurred before with another family member? Anybody had this?
Nope.
Wow. So you're the first.
Yeah, we had a family friend, you know, on my mom's side.
Oh,
okay. That had leukemia, but that's not blood relation, you know. It's just a friend. So we've had nobody in our family that's had leukemia. I'm the first one that's had leukemia, and as an adult, too, at that, you know. So definitely, you know, an eye-opening event for me was getting diagnosed with it.
Okay. So, David, what would you like the listeners to know that they may be dumbfounded about?
Well, about what do you mean, like cancer or about the bone marrow donation?
Just the whole aspect of it all, something that they might don't know or heard of myths about it.
Well, I mean, the process of what I went through, it was very intense, you know. Like, I had 2 rounds of chemo, 6 rounds of radiation, and you know, after all the lasting effects, you know, I've got a disease in me right now called avascular necrosis. I've had my left shoulder replaced, both my left and right hip replaced. I've just literally had my right knee replaced last August. I just had 2 MRIs done, and I've got to get my left knee replaced and my right shoulder replaced. So I've had 4 replacements, and now I'm going to be bringing it up to 6 in the next couple of years. So there's a lot of lasting, long after effects of, you know, the chemo and the diseases and all that. And it's about, you know, like I said, every day I wake up, I feel like I've been hit by a freight train. But you know what? I still put on that smile and walk out in public and act as if nothing is wrong, you know? It is really the power of positive thinking that has gotten me into a place where I don't let the littlest things affect me anymore the way I used to.
And you're not supposed to. As I said before, I'm just glad that you was able to get over this hump. So what is involved in a bone marrow transplant?
It's like a blood draw, you know. What they do is you get to get the bag of marrow. It looks just like a bag of blood. They'll hang it up and they'll put it into, well, for me, they put it into my Hickman line, which went right into my chest, and it was just like a blood transfusion. It was, you know, it was, the first hour and a half was normal, and then after that it got really intense, and I got really disorientated, so I don't really remember much of that, what happened after. I just remember kind of being sleepy and just everything was really intense.
Okay. Now, as we mentioned, music was a part of you. Did you feel it while the healing process was occurring too?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I just, whatever music was I was listening to, Tom Petty or George Harrison, you know, or anybody else, you know, it really got me through. It helped the time pass, you know, where I didn't have to think about the chemo going into me or any of the other medications going into me. It was a really good escape for me, was just to dive into music.
Yeah. Now, are you planning on writing more, David?
Oh, I've not stopped. I've continued writing. I've continued writing since this, and it's just, you know, it's just been such an amazing therapeutic process for me, was writing. I'm not going to stop. I'm not going to stop a good thing for me, you know what I mean? So I've just continued with it.
Well, I think that's a good thing. It helps to release all those, the negative energies, anything that's balled up inside of you. Writing just seems to just let it all out. Now, you know what? I thought the cover on this book was really cool, especially looking at your tattoos. Can you tell me about them?
Yeah, I guess, you know, when I moved down to California in 2009,
mm-hmm.
after, you know, I'd beaten everything, and I just thought, you know what, you only live once, and I just really wanted to do what I loved, and that was, you know, get tattooed. So I started getting tattooed, and I just really tattooed my story on my body. You know, one of my tattoos, I got my the leukemia ribbon, and it just says, to those who lost the battle, like an angel overlooking. I got survivor on my knuckles, you know, just a bunch of meaningful pieces to myself, but put in a way that I could communicate with other people.
Okay. Yeah, they are awesome. I love it. The ones on your knuckles, survivor, I said, these are so cool. Like, I could have used this when I was doing my tattoo project at Plain State University. I had to do a tattoo documentary. I was like, man, this would have actually worked. And then your story to go behind it, because I was getting a lot of people telling me their story, and I was like, they're exciting but not inspiring enough.
Yeah.
David, can you tell people out here how important it is to be a bone marrow donor?
It's so very important. You know, with the bone marrow donations, you never know if your family member could need it or a family friend could need it, or a random stranger. So, you know, if you go out there and just, you know, swab your cheeks, they're not going to take your bone marrow from you right away. It's not until you're called upon to save somebody's life that they actually get you to do the whole process. So, like I said, it's a very quick, painless, very fast and free process to just swab your cheeks. But when you go through the process and all that, it's like I said, it's very painless. It's very quick. And the reward is, you've saved somebody's life, or you're potentially going to be saving somebody's life. And that's pretty huge reward, in my opinion.
It is. But now there are some things that probably will prevent you from being a donor, won't it, David? Like if you have any diseases or what else?
Pardon, can you say that again? My phone cut out.
Oh, I'm sorry. There are certain things that can prevent you from becoming a donor, aren't? Like if you have a disease or thing.
Yes, of course. You know, there's going to be certain things. You know, if you have a previous history to diseases or cancers, yeah, you can't donate then. You pretty much have to be in a healthy kind of place and to donate, you know, the bone marrow from there. But it's like I said, it's an easy process to do.
Now, you beat this with God's help. Did you come to find spirituality?
Yeah, of course I did. You know, I'm Native American, and for me it was just getting in tune with my Creator again, especially during a time like this. My uncle's a medicine man, and he'd done a lot of ceremonies for me, and he was really my spiritual guider throughout this whole process. So I've been a very spiritual person with this.
Were you already as spiritual before any of this happened, David?
Yeah, of course. You know, like with my culture, I practiced a lot of what we do in our cultures, and yeah, I was a very spiritual person, you know, but when I got hit with what I got hit with, I had some problems with, you know, God. I'm like, why would you, not, I don't care that you did this to me, but why would you do it to the child? You know, like I had a lot of questions of why would you do it to them? And, you know, not really pitying myself, but pitying, like, the children. Why would you do that to the children? I don't get that. But it was through meeting a lot of people of different faiths that had said, he does it for a reason, to bring a family together, to bring a community, city, country, world together. He does everything for a reason. So you just need to understand it and be conscious and aware of what it is that he's trying to do for you guys. So that's really where that came in, and how I kind of think is that way now.
And that's so, and it is. It's so hard to listen to that when we say God has a reason for everything, because you be so upset and you like, I don't understand that reason. It'd be hard to really cope with that. And I know it had to be for you to just cope with that every single day. Besides just having God's help, did you seek out other groups, other centers to help you through this?
No, that was pretty much it. You know, I just really relied heavily on my family and some of my friends to get me through this, and they were, you know, just the best people that could have been there. And I really, you know, I've just really kind of kept to myself and just was getting through it day to day by myself, you know, and with, you know, sometimes with family and friends around, but I just didn't really look at it that way.
Yeah. And I think it's a Bible verse about that, questioning God, Isaiah 55, verse 8 through 9, for my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. And as it goes right back to what you said, David, God has his reason for everything. We don't think beyond that because we're just looking at the outside of it. We're not going on into the inside. Well, maybe he has his reason. He had his reasons. He had his reasons for you becoming closer to your family. You finding that guy, Christian Hartman, because you and him still talk today, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
That's great. I wish I could have had him on here so he could have gave his inspiring words, because I know it had to be traumatic part for him to just go through this, but it had to also be inspiring. That's a great moment. I wish I could just hug you right now in person, David.
Oh, thank you.
Now, in your bio, you mentioned you did not feel like you fit into this world. Why was that?
Because I feel when it, like, you know, my dad was a very successful man. My mom had helped him get there. My dad gave my sister all the attention. I just felt like I was an outsider looking in. That's really what that means, is just, you know, I just always felt like an outsider looking in to whatever the situation was, no matter where it was, is I was always an outsider looking in, and that's what I meant by that.
Okay. Yeah. So how's your health now that you moved on, the years have passed? Are you doing well with your health?
Doing very well with my health. I've been seeing a doctor down in Southern California now for the last few years who's really done a tremendous job in turning, you know, my health around from bad to good and maintaining that goodness, you know, with a holistic approach. And, you know, I'm very thankful that, you know, my path crossed his and that I'm able to, you know, be healthy again. You know, what the doctor has done for me is just tremendous, absolutely tremendous.
Yeah. You know, it's amazing. When listening to your story, it's amazing how people sometimes all they care about is the money and expensive cars, and no one really teaches them how to enjoy life. And then when something like that tragic happens to them, then it's like, oh, poor pitiful me. But then you want to call on God. But see, you already had that spirituality in you already. And to me, all life is about is securing a means to an end. Work all your life. Well, some people work all their life to die comfortably, but I hope I can retire. But you want to actually enjoy living, and that's what you're actually doing. So now, David, you're actually in California now?
Yes.
Okay. Why did you go there?
Because of the weather. You know, I mean, I love Canada, don't get me wrong, and Vancouver, you know, Canada's warmest city. It's still pretty cold, and like I said earlier, you know, I've got several replacements in my body and, you know, a disease that's progressing in me called avascular necrosis. So just being in the nice warm weather was really beneficial for me to heal without being in so much pain, and that was the major reason for me coming down here.
Okay. Well, David, I really do appreciate you for coming on this show and giving us your inspiring story and enlighten us with it as well. And can you tell people where they can go and find your book?
Yes, absolutely. Amazon.com. Meryl S. Scott, Bad to the Bone, The True Story of David Tucker Jr. is available on Amazon. Kobo, indigo.ca in Canada. It's available on redtuke.ca. It's also available on iTunes, Kobo, Nook, all of the book places, Barnes & Noble, everywhere. And also available on my website, www.davidtuckero.com, T-U-C-C-A-R-O.com. And you can get the book there, and I will send you a signed personalized copy for myself. And also on that, you can sign up to be a bone marrow donor, and that's really what the goal is to register as many bone marrow donors as possible.
Well, again, thank you, David, so much, and God bless you and your family.
Oh, thank you, and to you too. You know, may the great Creator bless and watch over you and your listeners and everybody else in the world. You know, the Creator is always out there watching everybody and making sure, you know, that you're doing the right thing. No matter what it is, He's always got a plan for you, and the Creator will always forgive you and help you throughout anything. I can't stress that enough, you know. The Creator is a great person.
And I agree with every bit of that. You just have to have a pure heart, and you also have to take the time to listen, because God be speaking to you in ways that we might don't understand, but you have to actually listen. He's talking to somebody out there right now. He's talking to one of you who is actually going through the same thing like David, but it's so good that David was on this show to show you that you don't have to give up hope. Write it down. Express your feelings. Go to a center where they can help you. Stay around family and friends as much as possible to get you through the tough times, because life can be so enjoyable. And don't let nobody tell you that your life is about to end, because God is not ready for you. He has not given up on you. That's what I want to tell you today. And like David said, if you haven't went out to see about yourself, just take 5 minutes. Go on the website. Take a second. Find out about becoming a bone marrow donor if you don't have any issues with your own health. And save another life. That's what it's all about today, people. And it's hump day today, so let's hump to it. So, again, thank you so much, David.
Oh, thank you so very much for giving me this incredible opportunity to share my story and really just have a nice chat with you. You know, it was a good interview today. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
It was. I'm very conversational. I try to be. I love to engage in conversation with people.
Yeah, it's a great thing. It's a great thing.
Well, thank you, Dave. I'm going to stay in touch with you, too.
Thank you. Absolutely. That's great. Thank you very much.
You're so welcome. Well, again, my listeners, I thank you so much for tuning in, and I hope that the Spirit has touched you in so many ways, because that's what we do on this show. I love to touch people, and you touch me in so many ways when you respond to me on my Facebook fan page. Please, if you have any questions, anything that's rattling up in your brain that you want to know, or if you feel like it's a certain topic that needs to be discussed, please let me know. I don't mind at all. And if you choose to hit me up through email, that would be fine, TekneshaDay@gmail.com. That's TekneshiaDay@gmail.com. Now, tomorrow coming up, I will have Joseph Nicasso, who will be talking about resurrecting America through spirituality. So that should be interesting tomorrow at 12 o'clock p.m. You know I'll be right here. And as I always say, God bless. But you gotta stay bad to the bone.
So on the day I was born, the nurses all gathered round, and they gazed in wide wonder at the joy they had found. The head nurse spoke up, to leave this one alone. She could tell right away that I was bad to the bone. Bad to the bone. Bad to the bone. Bad. 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 Bad to the bone. I broke a thousand hearts before I met you. I'll break a thousand more, baby. I'm here to tell you, honey, that I'm bad to the bone, bad to the bone, bad. Woman beg, and I make a good woman steal. I make an old woman blush, and I make a young girl squeal. I wanna be yours, pretty baby, yours and yours alone. I'm here to tell you, honey, that I'm bad to the bone. Bad, bad, bad.
Thank you for tuning in to The Bright Side with Tanisha.
Come back daily from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern.
God bless.